Let me rephrase this. You sent my client 16 emails, and the first 15, you didn't raise any concerns.
Is that a question?
In the 16th email, you raised concerns about the site's functionality. Were you leading them on for 6 weeks?
No.
Then why didn't you raise any of these concerns before?
It's raining.
I'm sorry?
It just started raining.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
No.
Do you think I deserve it?
What?
Do you think I deserve your full attention?
I had to swear an oath before we began this deposition, and I don't want to perjure myself, so I have a legal obligation to say no.
Okay, no. You don't think I deserve your attention?
I think if your clients want to sit on my shoulders and call themselves tall, they have a right to give it a try, but there's no requirement that I enjoy sitting here listening to people lie. You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red String Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is the man least likely to sue all of his friends into oblivion, Alex Perkins. Perk, how you doing tonight?
Don't bet on that one, buddy.
Here's the thing, Perk. I believe you would do it if you had the money, but you don't got the money.
I can't really afford court fees, but I would sue all my homies into oblivion at the drop of a hat.
What would you sue them for? What'd they do to you?
Trauma. Just general
just
trauma.
General trauma. Yeah, I would sue my family for that. Heyo. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. As always, you can find our show on Friday mornings. We post on podcast services. If you like it, tell your friends. This is the movie podcast. Every movie we do is related to the previous one by the same actors, same director, same writer, something along those lines. And this week, we're talking about The Social Network, and our connection was Dakota Johnson from the Peanut Butter Falcon we reviewed last week. So, yeah, let's get into a Perk. Introduce the movie for us.
Yeah, Social Network is a 2010 joint. It's basically the surrounding story behind the development of Facebook, and the principal characters involved with the whole process. And stars Jesse Eisenberg and Andrew Garfield mainly, and it's multiple Oscar nominee, directed by David Fincher, written by Aaron Sorkin, which is just like a match made in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And a couple little fun tidbits for you. The movie takes place quite a bit at Harvard, and as a reference to kind of get an idea of what Harvard was like around then, Aaron Sorkin met with Natalie Portman, who at the time was, or in that time region, was enrolled at Harvard. And that's actually...
Is that the movie star they referred to?
There's a quote in the movie
that
there are 19 Nobel laureates, 15 Pulitzer Prize winners, 2 future Olympians, and a movie star. And someone says, who's the movie star? And their response is, does it matter? The movie star is Natalie Portman.
That's awesome. I was wondering about that, but I totally forgot to look it up.
Yeah, no. That's awesome. The more you know.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into our thoughts. So I haven't seen it, you have. So if I may go first, Perk.
Yeah, please do.
This movie is fucking incredible. Goddamn. What what a fucking movie this is. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love watching movies, and they're great, but this is a fucking movie. It's got the whole package. You got insane acting, insane writing, great shots. That you mentioned the soundtrack last week. 10 out of 10. Absolutely. Like, this is a fucking movie right here. And I just absolutely loved it. I think it's really cool. It's based on a true story. I didn't know most of this stuff. Because I never really looked into Facebook or obviously seen the movie before. So much shit that I was just like, what the fuck? Like, mainly, like, the guy who started Napster was a part of this whole shit. Like,
of course.
Yeah, there's just, like, so much stuff in this movie I was very surprised by, but I just cannot get over the performances. The performances were absolutely insane, and the rating, like, goddamn. I fucking love this movie. Highly, highly recommend it. Yeah,
I loved it. Think that's, I mean, This is one of my favorite movies to watch. Like, it just gets better and better every time I watch it, even with, you know, present context.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a movie, it's just outstanding. It is Jesse Eisenberg at his best.
Yeah.
It is Andrew Garfield at his best. It is Justin Timberlake at his best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just across the board, just knockout performances. I like, specifically, I remember when this movie came out, this Andrew Garfield was new to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's actually like his big break, but that was the first thing I'd seen him in, and I thought he was fantastic, and I thought he had nowhere to go to but up. And then he worked his way into the Amazing Spider-Man franchise, and I was kind of bummed because those movies kind of suck.
But again, he's good in those movies.
A big letdown. Well, yeah, he's fine, but like to you know, go from like a really just fantastic supporting performance
mm-hmm.
In an Oscar level movie to like a bad superhero movie, it was a bit of a bummer for me. Mm-hmm. But he's, you know, since worked his way back into prominence.
Well, if spoiler for later, my recommendation is Hacksaw Ridge, which is basically has been the next big movie after Amazing Spider-Man, and he's fucking fantastic in that movie. So, like, Andrew Garfield's a fucking actor, and I think you're right, he did take his lumps for a while after Amazing Spider-Man, but yeah, the dude can act, and everybody in this movie, like you said, is just insane. Even like the really small roles, like Dakota Johnson was our connection from last week. She had one scene, but she did great in it.
I don't even know who she was. What
she
was
the
bit?
Girl that Justin Timberlake slept with his very first scene that he's introduced.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, like, she was great. Even like Brenda Song, which is just so funny because like I remember when
Brenda
this movie
Song
was
is so good.
When this movie was coming out, I remember seeing the trailers. I'm like, that's Brenda Song from Sweet Life of Zach and Cody, and she's making out with a guy in a stall. But like, she was really good in it.
It's London Tipton, right? Right.
Yep.
There
you go. There you go.
No, and she's great. Also, Rooney Mara, right,
yep.
As
mm-hmm.
Erica.
Yep.
That, like, just, it's funny, because this movie's not a, it's not like a spectacle, so much as the scenes are just really artistically crafted dialogue,
mm-hmm.
and the first scene of the movie, which opens in a bar with Mark Zuckerberg talking to Erica,
mm-hmm.
his girlfriend at the time. It's just a really, really good, well-crafted dialogue scene.
Yeah.
And it's really tight, really sharp, and the back and forth, like, even though that's pretty much her only real presence in the movie, I think, you know, even Rooney Mara kind of knocked it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. Well, she has the great scene later, too, when they're at the restaurants, and he goes up to try to talk to her again. She just, like, shuts mm-hmm. him down. Rashida Jones is, like, there's a bunch of fucking great people in this movie, and I think for a lot of them, it was, like, I know this was a fact, Dakota Johnson's first movie. Looking at Andrew Garfield's IMDb, I think this was his big break, like you said. I think this is Jesse Eisenberg's one of his first movies. Like, this is a kind of a launch pad, I think, for a lot of people. And yeah, it's just outstanding. Did you see in the facts, was Erica a real person, do you know? Or was she
good question.
Made up for the movie?
I don't know. I don't know if she's a real person. I'll look that up right now.
Because that's the thing, is like, obviously this movie is based on real events, but it is a dramatization, so I'm sure certain things were exaggerated and all that to make a better movie, but
she's a fictional character.
Okay, yeah. And she is kind of used to make Zuckerberg seem kind of an incel, which, like, I would feel worse for him if he wasn't a fucking billionaire, you know?
Right.
But I think it works well as a kind of a through line throughout the movie and being kind of a drive to a lot of his actions. And just kind of like the jealousy and like self-image issues he has of like trying to be more than he is to an extent where he ends up hurting people around him. But yeah, it's just it's a great film. Absolutely great.
Mm-hmm. No, I love the counterplay. Like, in a movie that's so heavily based on dialogue, your actors and characters need to have really good chemistry, and they all do. So, mm-hmm. like, everyone plays off each other so well.
Mm-hmm.
The tension between Andrew Garfield and Justin Timberlake,
mm-hmm.
The way that Jesse Eisenberg clearly just, like, is in awe of, you know, Justin Timberlake, yep. Sean Parker, it's great.
It's fantastic. I do want to mention, last week we talked about Letterkenny. And we talked about we don't watch the Fartbook episode because, in my opinion, it's like the only like not funny episode of Letterkenny because it's mostly fart jokes, which like are funny to a point. However, in there's a character, Devin, who just quotes this movie the entire time. And I knew he was quoting Social Network, but I'd never seen the movie. Now seeing it and hearing those lines, it was very funny. Just hearing the, I need the algorithm. No, I need the algorithm. Just like the shit that he said in a comedic fashion now, like in a serious context, I couldn't really handle it. So yeah, that was
This movie was based off of that episode of Letterkenny.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes a little too much sense. but yeah, I don't know if you want to start with it or talk about any specific scenes in this, but like, I'll start with the only scene I didn't like. How about that?
Okay.
Just because it was shot completely different from the rest of the movie was when the twins were in Europe doing the rowing race. When they're actually like rowing, like in the actual race, I'm not good at vocab, but like the stylization was different. Like there was much more like sharp focus in the middle and out of focus on the sides. You know what I'm talking about? Like it was just shot differently, and sure. The shots they show, like where the camera was just a lot more punched in, and it just felt like kind of out of place. Like I understand like that whole scene needed to be in the movie to show the Winklevoss is like finally deciding to go on with the lawsuit, but I just thought that went a little bit too long and it was kind of a weird weird deal. But I will say the effect of having the double twins looked great. Double what's his name? Armie Hammer.
Yeah, that's actually another little fun fact. So it was Armie Hammer acting next to a body double with CGI face put on.
Oh, they said a head replacement?
Yeah, which you can't tell, can you?
No, like, it was fantastic.
No, it's really good when... See, that's the thing is when, you know, an action movie takes CG way to the max and has an action scene where the main character's running around looking like Gumby.
Mm-hmm,
like, it pulls you out of it. But if you can do it in a reserved way, like, I honestly, you know, you could have told me that they just shot Armie Hammer in those scenes twice and overlaid it.
Yeah.
And I would have believed you. But yeah, it's a body double with a CG face.
I think it works better because I was looking for the scene. I assumed it was shot twice and overlaid. And I was looking for the scene. So in that scene I just mentioned, when they leave the room, they leave like one after, or maybe it's when they're going into the president's office, they go in one after the other. And I was looking for like the seams in that, but I couldn't find them. The body double makes way more sense. It just works better. And the head replacement, I didn't even notice. So.
No, there's a video somewhere on the internet, which is not helpful, but on how David Fincher uses CG, and he does it very reserved, but so that it's not noticeable, but it's a lot of CG, like a lot of the backgrounds in his shots are just not there.
Really?
So yeah, I'm going to pull that video, I'll find it and send it to you. But okay. He does some really, really cool things with CG that you wouldn't necessarily think. Lots of green screens.
That's awesome. I've been really into VFX lately because I've been going down the Corridor Crew YouTube channel. If you're of any interest in VFX, highly recommend looking up these guys. They are VFX artists themselves, and they kind of react to / like analyze popular VFX shots in movies. And I've just learned so much about how VFX are made and kind of the thought process behind them, like you're saying, particularly like when to use them, when not to use them, what they should be used for, and what they shouldn't be used for. It's just fascinating. And I think it's good to know as we get more and more technologically advanced and we see more of these kind of things in movies. So yeah, that sounds great. And I didn't notice anything that looked off in this movie at all.
And then another little tidbit from the body switch or the body double. So the guy who played Armie Hammer's body double is the dude who gets turned away when Andrew Garfield and Jesse Eisenberg are guarding the bathroom.
Oh, really?
After they have their bathroom scene. Yeah, the dude who comes in and they're like, there's some girls in there washing up. And he's like, nice. That's the guy who wore Armie Hammer's face.
that's a cool little Easter egg. Also, Aaron Sorkin's in this movie.
Is he really?
Yeah, he plays the ad exec that they go pitch to.
Oh, nice.
The one time we actually see them in the office where Eisenberg's just like making that like clicking sound. It's being an asshole.
Oh, and I didn't mention it earlier, but when I said this is like every actor at their best, the only exception I can come up with is Armie Hammer.
Because
he was better in Call Me By Your Name.
Still haven't seen that yet, but I believe
Not saying he's bad in this movie, because he's very good in this movie. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But he's really, really good in Call Me By Your Name.
He's good at playing that big, big jock kind of guy. That's still like, is that like a Harvard jock, you know?
Yeah, no, he fits the bill perfectly for, you know, Harvard jock, maybe cannibal. You know?
I was going to say, he's the cannibal guy, right? We got to make we note that. Oh, man. But yeah, What do you think of the structure of kind of having the depositions kind of interlaid throughout the movie? Because initially I didn't like it because I feel like it's kind of a spoiler because then you know what's going to happen. But I came around on it because it's like, okay, well, you know what's going to happen now. You kind of want to learn the why, and that's kind of more interesting than the what.
That's actually someone's done a study into this, but. Where they had a test group read a book, and for half the test group they spoiled it, and for the other half they didn't, to see who enjoyed it more, and the group that had it spoiled enjoyed the book more.
Interesting.
It's like, it doesn't necessarily ruin it, excuse me, it doesn't really ruin it if you spoil it necessarily, or if you know where it's going. It can kind of add, because you're like, wait, we end up here? Like, how did we get there? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd imagine. I imagine it only works though if the end, what you're spoiled on, what the ending is interesting. Like if it's just like a textbook ending, you're like, okay, yeah, I could see that. But if it's kind of like a shock or a surprise, and it's like, oh yeah, how does this happen?
I don't mind the deposition scenes because I think there are a few nice little bits in there too that are pretty funny, like the line about. Do I have your full attention? And he's like, well, I swore an oath, so no, you have the minimum amount of my attention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also when the lawyer says the original 1,000 and the added 18,000 in the bank account making 19,000 and Jesse Eisenberg's like, wait, hold on. Let me just check your math. Yeah, that's what I got too.
He's such an asshole in this movie. He's such a fucking asshole. I disagree with Rashida Jones at the end, where she's like, "You're not an asshole. You're just trying very hard to be." No, he's a straight up asshole. He's just so self-absorbed. No. Like,
so that's actually maybe I think that's the only gripe I've got with this movie. I don't really care for Rashida Jones' character.
Yeah, I don't think it's super needed.
No, she seems just in the movie to prompt. Exposition out of Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
And then also that line at the end where she says, "You're not an asshole. You're just trying to be." That's the one little area where like context has led us to now. You know, no, he's just an asshole.
Yeah.
Simply an asshole. So
he just doesn't know how to, think about others at all. And speaking of that, one scene I would have really appreciated was a quick flashback to how him and Eduardo became friends. Because it's like, why are you friends with this guy? You know? Even in the beginning, when they're just making face mash and shit, it's still just like, why the fuck are you, like, I don't know. I would have, it still hits hard of the betrayal and everything. And the, you know, I was your only friend, like, hits hard. But I would have appreciated just seeing how they became friends, just to have a little more context for that.
I think that could have been okay, but it would have taken place outside of the timeline of the entire rest of the movie.
Sure, but to be fair, the deposition does as well. That's in the future.
That's true. Yeah. No, good point.
Yeah.
But that's also, like, interspliced throughout the entire movie. And if they, you know, went through and interspliced a whole bunch of backstory around, Eduardo and Mark's relationship, that would have, you know,
sure.
added a whole nother extension to the movie, and
I don't need much. I was seeing like the scene they met for the first time, like in a computer lab or whatever it was. Just like, you know, a 2-minute scene would have been enough for me to be like, okay. I wanted to buy that they were friends.
Sure. I think even then that would have just been a little extemporary. What, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Extraneous.
Sure. Yeah. I got that. And like I said, it still hit me hard when
Sure.
Yeah, like the I was your only friend. It's like, yeah, you were. but then you started worshiping fucking Justin Timberlake, and you know, you messed up.
Nah, the scene, the blow up scene at Facebook, so good. Andrew Garfield is so good. I like Standing by You, Sean. Makes me feel so tough. Like, that was his Oscar moment. Mm-hmm. I don't think he got a nom. He should have gotten it. That should have been, this movie should have been Andrew Garfield's first nomination, but
yeah,
I'm sure it was that he was too new to the scene.
Yeah, this movie won Oscars for best writing, best achievement score. In film editing, and
we haven't really talked too much about that yet.
I mean, yeah, you told me to look out for it, so I was listening, and even the scene after, you know, Erica breaks up with him, he's just walking through campus, the opening credits. It's incredible. That's incredible. And I was, it's just great the whole time.
So it's, as I mentioned last week, the score is done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, who are Nine Inch Nails, which is kind of out of left field, and a lot of people don't understand where they're coming from in, you know, like hard rock type music. And to come around and do something like this where the main theme of the movie, with just a very slow, like drawn out piano melody with like very like shaky like synths in the background, just kind of buzzing. It's just so powerful. It really just adds to the ambiance that much. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
easily deserved that best score Oscar.
Oh, definitely. And you know, rockers make good composers, because I listened to an interview recently with Danny Elfman, who's a prolific composer, and I didn't realize he used to be in a rock band. He was in Oingo Boingo back in the day.
Nice.
And that's kind of his background. So, I mean, it's been done before. I want to see more of it.
Yeah, and another little, I suppose, continuity for you. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross won their second Oscar for score for Disney Pixar's Soul.
Yep, it's a great movie.
That's so good. Again, like, that's the thing I love about when they score a movie. It's, you know, all these other movies, like, I love Zimmer, right? Like, they all do great stuff, but so much of it is based in, you know, an orchestra or a symphony.
Yep.
And it's all different but cut from the same cloth. And then, you know, like in Soul specifically, and in this movie, there's a lot of weird shit in there, like they just kind of put together some different sounds that really add to the moment and aren't just like a tuba swell, you know,
it's like you said,
clash,
it's that
of cymbals,
it's that buzzing in the background, which I remember, like, Soul has a similar kind of thing to kind of just, like, it's not even to add tension, it's to keep the tension at that level. You know, at the level it's at. And then, you know, yeah, it's very, very well done. It works so well in this movie because there's a lot of tension in this movie. But one question I have is, so I know this movie is based on a book, right? Based on a book that somebody wrote about this whole situation. But, like, how did this movie get made? Like, I'm just like, how did Zuckerberg allow this to happen? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying you can, like, stop free speech and free expression and shit, but it's just like, there's no way he's happy this movie coming out, right?
So apparently his plan was to never see it. But he ended up actually going to see it with some coworkers, and he said his reaction was that despite some inconsistencies, at least they got his clothes right. You know, running around in flip-flops and shorts and a hoodie. I don't know. I agree, 'cause it might be a hot take, but I feel like if you're making a biopic about someone who's alive, and this isn't really a biopic, it's more of like an origin story of a company, but it functionally it's like that. If you're making a biopic about someone alive and they agree with everything in the movie, you're doing a bad job.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like how you do a documentary, right? I mean, documentary is more factual, but it's like you kind of do it to expose things that people don't necessarily want exposed. I'm not saying this is some big, you know, scandal of what happened to Huffit, but it's like Zuckerberg, not a great dude, at least not how he's portrayed in this movie.
No, and I do appreciate that he isn't, you know, he's not an anti-hero Mm-hmm. He's just kind of an asshole. Like, he's the protagonist of the movie, but, you know, as the viewer, you kind of shift your presence more towards Andrew Garfield as the movie goes on and on.
Right. And he's not, I mean, he's an asshole, but he's also a very talented asshole. Like, we do get to see his,
oh, yeah,
his prowess, which I never really was aware of. Like, I didn't, like I said, I never really looked into Facebook. I didn't really know what Zuckerberg's deal was. I didn't know if it was an Elon Musk situation where he just bought a company and he's like, oh, I'm so smart. But I mean, he's got the chops. Like, it makes sense to, that what happened happened. But yeah, just showing his just unrelentingness to be the best and just do whatever it takes and not care about anyone else, you know.
Right, but still, just like, you can just like seething with jealousy the whole time.
Yeah, just absolutely, yeah. And that's the thing, yeah, is like, it's realistic, like, that I could see that person existing, but also it's like, was that hammed up a bit for the dramatization? But it works the movie, so I can't be that mad. It's hard. It's hard when you have a movie like this that's based on true events. It's like, how upset should you get about inconsistencies? But at the end of the day, it's a fantastic film, just on its own.
Right. No, so rarely can I, like, walk down the list on a film and just check every box as, like, really good. Like, fantastic directing, fantastic writing, mm-hmm, fantastic cinematography, fantastic acting, fantastic score. Like, just everything in this movie is just a box checked.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I pulled the IMDb for the first time, you know, a few days ago, and 95 Metascore. I have not seen that in a hot minute. That's,
no, that's really insane. Impressive.
Yeah.
That's really high. Because, like, one asshole puts, like, 20% didn't like, I'm a MySpace guy, like, and then you get tanked.
So, yeah. I don't have much more to say. Just watch this movie if you haven't seen it. Like, it is just absolutely incredible, just as a film. So, but, yeah, let's get into some recommendations. I can go first here. So,
sure, I said, yeah, it, yeah.
But Hacksaw Ridge. So this is another Andrew Garfield movie. Like I said, it's kind of his main one he did after making Spider-Man. And I don't remember when it came out. It was like 2016 or something like that. And I watched this movie, Perk, when I was flying home from New Zealand after my study abroad. And sure, maybe this influenced my enjoyment of the movie, but I was very tired. I was very hungry because I had like a 10-minute layover, so I was like running between planes, and, you know, we put this movie on, and due to my compromised physical state, I just bawled like a baby in this movie. It got me. Like, there's a scene, I don't know what, there's a scene that in particular that just really broke me, and it was embarrassing because these two high school Australian kids are next to me, so I had to like, and I was on the window seat, so I was trying to like turn and not show me myself crying. But this movie, it's super good. Absolutely insanely good performance by Garfield. Shot really well. Another based on a kind of a true story kind of thing. So if you like another kind of dramatization of an actual events, great acting again. Gotta recommend Hacksaw Ridge for you.
Yeah, I can relate to your crying on a plane because I watched Marriage Story on a plane.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
Not yet. I'm scared to watch it.
So no, I'll sum it up for you. Your heart breaks right away, and then the rest of the movie is just like breaking your heart just procedurally more over the course of 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So and then at the end, they just kind of pull up with a little bit of a like a bittersweet, and I was a wreck. I was an absolute basket case.
Just a shell.
So yes. All these people seeing a grown man whose shoulders are too wide for a plane seat, just bawling his eyes out. Yeah, it's funny. It's real funny.
It's different on planes, man. I mean, I usually tear up and cry in movies these days, but yeah, on planes, it hits different.
Yeah, no, I never really used to cry at movies, but maybe I've just been beaten down by the years or something, but more often, you know, it gets me.
So I never cried ever watching anything, and I think part of it was like toxic masculinity of like, I'm a tough guy, like guys don't cry. But I started crying at stuff when I started watching anime, which I know is kind of a cringy thing to say, but like
that's a little weebly.
It's a little weebly, but when I was in New Zealand is when I started watching it, because I was like, I need something to do when sure. I'm not doing other stuff. And
other than like climb all the mountains.
Exactly. When I'm not climbing mountains, I'm watching anime. And yeah, like something about just like the anime is very like emotion driven. That's kind of one of the, what should you call it, tent poles of anime. And that got me, and ever since, I'll cry at pretty much anything these days. If it's a sad moment, if it's like a super hype moment, just anything like emotional moment, I'll at least like tear up. So that broke the floodgates, and now it happens all the time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the first. Like, I mean, like maybe the first was like Up.
Yeah.
But like even then, like maybe just like welling up a little bit, and maybe a single tear or two. But the real straw that broke the camel's back was Disney Pixar. Is it Pixar? Disney's Coco.
I was just about to bring up Coco, dude. That last scene.
Dude, I was audibly crying. Like, I was, like, loudly sobbing in my basement. That, yeah. Oh, that movie's hit so hard. I gotta watch it again.
I think I saw that with our friend Chris in the theaters, and I just lost it, dude. And you see it. That's the thing. It's like the ending was essentially spoiled, because it's so obvious what's gonna happen. And then you are just still bawling your eyes out. Yeah, it's not like it's that hard of a
twist.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What a great fucking movie. But anyway. Perk, do you have any movies you'd recommend?
I'm supposed to, sure. I guess my recommendation would be to just follow off the back of something, either something Sorkin has done or David Fincher has done. David Fincher is one of my favorite directors, so I'd specifically recommend like Seven or Zodiac are two really good ways to go. You know, for movies to check out. And I love Sorkin, so I've still not watched The West Wing all the way through, but like he's done other stuff. Like he did the movie Molly's Game, which is really, really good. And Sorkin just has this stuff. He also, I think he wrote at least part of House of Cards, which I liked at the time. Mm. And he has this style of he writes dialogue that is damn near inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tight and really sharp and fast and like professional ping pong. But it's super aesthetically pleasing and really nice to listen to. And usually it's just very well written. So, check out some more Sorkin, some more Fincher.
You know, I've been looking at Fincher's page while you were talking, and you're gonna get mad at me. I think this might be the first Fincher thing I've ever seen.
You bastard. See, we've tossed around the idea on this podcast of doing like a string where we go through a director's work and go like front to back on a director's filmography. And everyone we've come up with, like, we'll go like, oh, you know, it'd be fun, like Denis Villeneuve. And I'll be like, yeah, I've seen all but one of his features. And then we'll say like Wes Anderson. Yeah, I've seen all but one of his features. Or Nolan. Yeah, I've seen all of his features. Or or David Fincher. I've seen all but a couple.
See, that's you, though. Me, I'm a
that's,
movie.
Yeah,
you,
that's
you
me.
Know?
So I'll just, I'll keep holding your hand through this.
I will say, if we do Fincher, we have to watch all 50 of his music videos, because he's done so many goddamn music videos. That was like his background.
All right.
But yeah. All right, cool. Well, that is our review for The Social Network. But before we go and reveal next week's movie, let's talk about some bonus reviews. Perk, what have you been watching this week?
Yeah, all right. So this weekend I was able to check out, because it's on Apple TV Plus, The Tragedy of Macbeth. I think it's Joel Coen is the director, half of the Coen brothers, starring Frances McDormand and Denzel Washington. And this will be all over the Oscars.
Really?
And I think deservedly so. I went into this, I didn't know the story of Macbeth. I haven't read the play, haven't seen a performance. My only reference point was the Jimmy Neutron version.
Yes.
The Jimmy Neutron Space so Macbeth featuring Bowlby. I went into the movie essentially blind, and it's a little dense because it's Shakespearean English.
Mm-hmm.
But after the first, you know, 20 or so minutes, you kind of just click into a mode where you kind of just get on a roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
The acting is really good. Really good. I mean, it's Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand. I don't think anyone should be surprised that right. The acting's phenomenal. I don't remember his name because he's not someone I've heard of, but there's a like a side character who I think is really good, and then a woman who plays like some witch sisters
mm-hmm.
that is like scary good, and I think should instantly be in the conversation for supporting actress, even though she's very briefly in the film.
That'd be Catherine Hunter.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like I'll take your word for it.
As witches, so I think that's her.
Okay. That's probably correct. It's like the weird sisters. But yeah, so the movie's great. It's super weird. It's the settings are very, very much like a play. And all like everything is like, so Denzel will be in a hallway that all of a sudden the lighting will shift so that the lighting's coming through windows instead mm-hmm. of from interior.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And everything just plays out like a stage show. And the backgrounds of like landscapes are dramatized to the point where they look like they're, you know, painted backgrounds.
Mm.
It's black and white, and it's by A24. So it checks all my boxes, you know, as that white guy, you know.
So let me ask you, because both of us have seen the movie Fences, which I did not like because it felt too much like a play. It was right. based on a play, and it was just super slow, and the characters would be sitting around for entire scenes, and it was just like, it just with dialogue, and it just wasn't very, it didn't feel like it should have been a movie. It felt like it should have stayed a play. Does it suffer from that, does it move along pretty well?
So maybe I should watch that movie again, give it a second shot, but I agreed with you at the time. It's just, it's too play heavy. Mm-hmm. Whereas this movie translates well.
Okay.
There's a fair amount of action going on, and there are a few soliloquies and some dialogues that none of them stretch on too long.
And also, this movie's under 2 hours, so I was very surprised. That would be like pushing 3 hours, if I'm being honest, because it's a Shakespearean play.
Right, you'd think.
Hour 45 is not bad.
There's actually, in the story, there's not all too many events that take place.
Okay.
It's just more of like observing characters dealing with their situations.
Right, right.
It's a study in guilt and paranoia, essentially.
Mm. Okay.
I'm not very, very good. Would recommend.
I'm not a big Shakespeare guy, but I might have to check it out based on recommendation here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too big into Shakespeare either, but like when you hit all my other green flags, like I'm in.
Yeah. So.
It's a director I like. It's actors I like. It's black and white. It's A24.
Mm-hmm. Come on.
It has to be good.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Denzel Washington, I just found out today that John David Washington is his son.
Surely we discussed this.
No, I did not know that.
No, I swear we discussed this when we talked about Malcolm X.
Oh, maybe we did. Because I'd forgotten.
So I told you when we did Malcolm X that I told you that one of the branches we could take off of that was John David Washington, Denzel Washington's son, because he's in the scene at the very end with all the kids saying I am Malcolm X.
No, you know, okay, you did. I do remember you telling me that was John David Washington. I had somehow blocked out you saying that was Denzel's son, or maybe you said it and I just didn't.
Well, maybe I didn't mention
it
but
in my head.
We just didn't make the continuity.
I saw it on a headline saying, like, what the fuck? That makes a little too much sense. But anyway, now I know. Now it's locked in, Perk.
Apple doesn't fall far from the tree in terms of acting talent either.
No, it does not, for sure. I can go next. So I have not watched a lot this week because I've been in video game mode. I'm back on The Witcher 3 because my friends are playing it. Fucking love that game.
Saw that.
So all I've been watching is the anime Bleach. Which is considered one of the big three, one of the biggest like 90s anime. Actually, it's early 2000s, but around that time period, late 90s. And I wasn't planning on watching this just because I heard it wasn't that good. And just not really interested in it. But I made a deal with my friend, Chris, I mentioned earlier, that for every episode of Bleach I watched, he'll watch an episode of One Piece, which is my favorite anime, that he didn't want to watch. So we made our deal, and I've watched the first arc of Bleach, which is about the first 20 episodes. And I gotta say, Perk, I'm liking it a lot more than I thought I would.
All right.
I assume this would be a very classic shonen. I mean, it is a classic shonen, but like comparing this like Naruto, which I am pretty critical of. A lot of people love that show. I'm not a huge fan of it just because I don't really like any of the characters except for Shikamaru, my dude.
What a drag.
I think Bleach has really fun characters. It actually has like good female characters, like multiple. And I'm like, the fuck? This is a shonen? How is this possible? Story is like good enough. The thing that's honestly been really keeping me in is the music. I don't know why, but this music just fucking slaps. It's like kind of like edgy rock stuff. Some weird synth shit, and it just fits the world a lot. I mean, because they're fighting like demons, essentially, classic, you know, anime thing. But I'm just surprised by how much I'm liking it. I don't know. I've heard it doesn't really keep its quality the entire time, because it's like over 200 episodes, but for the first 20, I'm having a great time. I'm excited to keep watching it, and I would recommend it at this point. So we'll see what happens as I keep going on. But so far, I'm liking Bleach.
Nice.
But Perk, tell me about Detroiters.
Yeah, so Detroiters is a show I've been meaning to watch for a long time because my pretty much 80% of my personality is quoting Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Robinson's one of my favorite comics, and I think what he's doing is fantastic, just killing it in the sketch comedy game. And I knew that he had done the show Detroiters a few years ago that only went for a couple seasons with I'm blanking on his...
Sam Richardson,
thank you. With his buddy Sam Richardson, and it's the two of them, and they run an ad agency in Detroit. And it's two seasons long, and it is tragically too short because it is really, really good. So basically, if you like I Think You Should Leave, Detroiters is just I Think You Should Leave with a running narrative.
Mm.
So it's very much the same style of humor. It's just they actually have a carrying on plot.
Yeah, I knew it was only on for a few seasons, but I didn't realize it was only 20 episodes total. That is not a lot. Yeah,
literally just two seasons, 2x10.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tragedy. And I, you know, that's something that I hope could come back, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe not even just come back, but I hope we get another project with, like, Tim Robinson and Sam Richardson.
Yeah.
They have fantastic chemistry, because I think they're just actually best friends.
Yeah. Do you think it was just slightly too early for its time? Because, I mean, when I Think You Should Leave came out, it took some time, but it's become, like, a cult classic, and it got a massive audience. So I wonder if the show came out now, it would do better. But it was on Comedy Central, which I think at the time, this is 2017.
It was probably like Wednesday nights at like 11 p.m. on Comedy Central or something. So like, you're always going to run into trouble with that. I think Netflix is so much better of a platform for like sketch comedy stuff like Tim Robinson. Because, you know, it's just always there and you see it and you're like, oh, I'll throw it on.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, back in the day where it's just you have to catch something every week or you're ruined, or you got a DVR.
Like, his style of comedy is very much our generation's style of comedy, but our generation isn't watching Comedy Central. We're not watching cable.
No.
You know?
No.
So, yeah, hopefully, it's on Paramount Plus, at least. I don't know what else it's on. What did you watch it on?
I watched it on Paramount Plus.
Okay, yeah.
Which that's the thing, is I've been waiting for this to be, like, for the show to be available.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have Paramount Plus now, and I'm like, oh, nice, it's on there. Look at that. So
there you go. If you're interested, if you like, I think you should leave, check out Detroiters.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then the last thing I wanted to shout out, because it dropped as of recording yesterday, the Moon Knight trailer. Did you watch this, Burke?
I did.
Are you excited for it?
I was less excited once I found out it's a series and not a movie, which just is lame because it'll be way better character development and plot arcs if it's a series. Mm-hmm. But I'm lazy, and I like my consumables in two-hour increments.
I get that.
No, but this is the first of the Marvel series that I might actually give a knock, give a try, because seemingly it's its own new continuity. I'm sure it'll all be linked up because it's Marvel, so it has to be. But it doesn't look like you need any other... previous knowledge to watch it.
Yeah,
and I mean, I love Oscar Isaac. So.
Oh, he's incredible. And that's a good point. It's the first, besides What If, I guess, that was an anthology animated series. Every other show has existing characters.
I do want to check out What If, too.
Yeah, it's a good time. But yeah, this is the next Marvel show coming out in March, end of March. Oscar Isaac starring in it. And he's a person with dissociative identity disorder. And he just feels like he's kind of losing his mind. And things are happening. And somehow he's turns into Moon Knight. It looks very psychological horror-y, and I'm just so, so excited. I love Oscar Isaac. I think he's going to absolutely kill it. And it looks like it's shot really, really well, and they're doing cool stuff with, effects, trying to, portray his kind of mental illness. So, yeah, if you haven't checked it out, check out that trailer. I'm super stoked. And we get Ethan Hawke, which I don't know if I'm super excited about. Ethan Hawke's fine. We watched him in Training Day before we started running the podcast.
I actually quite like Ethan Hawke. But... Okay. Has he not been a superhero villain already? He looked super familiar.
Not in the MCU.
Okay.
I mean, he's going to be in the
Maybe
North
I'm thinking Man. Of I'm thinking of the villain from Iron Man 3.
That would be Guy Pierce.
Yes.
Which I don't knock you for mistaking
look
them.
Pretty similar.
Yeah, they look very similar.
I think
similar.
They look pretty similar, and they both are rocking a very similar hairstyle.
And they kind of do similar things, I feel like. They take similar roles.
True. I mean, Guy Pearce is in the GOAT movie, the GOAT time travel movie, Memento.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a great movie. But yeah.
Yeah, but no, they, both good actors. But I think Ethan Hawke is a very good actor, so I'm excited to see what he'll do. From the trailer, he looks very one note. So
looks like he's been kind of like a cult leader kind of guy.
Yeah,
we'll see. Yeah, I'm so excited to watch this. I don't know if it's going to be probably 6 or 7 or 8. That's what they've been doing.
Sure.
But yeah, March 30th. Let's go. All right. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we are using Rashida Jones as our connection point because I really want to rewatch the movie I Love You, Man. Perk has not seen it. This is probably my favorite rom-com of all time that isn't actually a rom-com, but it kind of is. So I Love You, Man, streaming on Netflix, starring the boy Paul Rudd. How can you not love Paul Rudd?
Do love Paul Rudd.
Just a very, you're going to have a great time with this movie, Perk. It's just feel good movie. So yeah, next week, I Love You, Man, Netflix. But until next time, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.